Well, hey, cousins, you are listening to Revolutionary Hood Rat with Kim Young of Dope Black Social Worker, and welcome back. We have this episode. It might be long, it might be short. I'm not entirely sure. I'm definitely recording it late as it is Thursday, Halloween night, and I'm going to release the episode today because, well, I just did not have time nor the energy to get this episode out. And at the time, I didn't really know what I wanted to talk about, but now I do. And because I know what I want to talk about, had to plug the microphone in to get this off. So grateful that y'all have tuned in yet again for another episode of the podcast. Let's go ahead and jump right into the revolutionary news for the week. And the news for this week is the people, us. We are the revolutionary news for the week because we are near the end of all the election madness. And it has been quite the last 2.5 years, because unlike other countries, this funky ass country runs their elections for a good 2.5 years. Other countries be in and out this bitch in 3 months. The candidates come, they do and say the things they need to be said. They go where they need to go, talk to the people, meet to the people. They have their election. They put somebody in office and they go about their business all in the span of a couple of months. But nah, this raggedy ass, dreadful, and at times heartbreaking country that I would not want to live anywhere else has us in this bullshit for a solid 2.5 years, and we are almost at the finish line as election night is next week. Yes, it's a figurative finish line because for many it does feel like an end, but for those who just pay attention or aware of how these things go, it's really just more of the same, or just the beginning of anew. The beginning of some new foolishness to deal with, the beginning of some new trauma, pain, distribution or circulation, hopefully, of hope. We'll see how this goes. Either way it goes, I am giving revolutionary news to us, the people, because we have been through it. We have been put through it. We have, in many ways, lost our line of sight on the things that are important. We have put too much faith in politicians and not enough faith in people. We have also given too much of our power to politicians by making them celebrities or people to prop up on a pedestal instead of really seeing them as individuals that we have power over, honestly. And the moment that I really, you know, continue to wish for is more people to reclaim their power from politicians and really participate in exercising their power beyond just voting, but in all of the ways that matter at the local level, most importantly, the things that happen in your own neighborhoods, in your schools, the reason you may not have a trash can or don't have a sidewalks in your neighborhood, or there's no speed bumps, or as they call them, speed tables, and people are speeding in your neighborhood. All of these things that happen at the local level that we just don't pay attention to. And we only like to tune in to all of the production, theatrics, and the drama behind national elections that happen in this country. I do wish that more people would reclaim their power from politicians and politics and really exercise it in a way that benefits us and does not benefit them. So I'm giving revolutionary news to us. We are almost at November 5th, and then we can just hopefully take a collective sigh. It's not going to be a sigh of relief. It's going to be a sigh of, God damn, finally, shit. I mean, I know that's what I'm going to say. When this election is over, because I have been consistently taking my deep breaths of just breathing throughout all these things. So I want to encourage y'all to do the same. And we are almost there. And please take care of each other, return back to each other throughout this entire process. Now, let's go ahead and get into some Earth is Ghetto, because it's, you know, just how the segment title is named. We have some things to talk about. We have some things to talk about. I'm trying to figure out which way to organize it in my mind. So we definitely got to talk about the Love is Blind reunion, the Love is Blind season seven reunion. So we're going to do that. But first, let me just make the honorable mentions of Sweet Bobby on Netflix and Breath of Fire on HBO Max. So if you have not tuned in to either one of these docuseries, well, one is more like a documentary because Sweet Bobby is just one film, like an hour and a half or whatever. And then Breath of Fire is a docuseries on HBO. So it has several episodes that are released every week. So Breath, let me start with Sweet Bobby, just real quick. Tap into Sweet Bobby because old girl was in a 10-year relationship with somebody online that she thought was somebody, but they weren't that somebody. And she was doing that shit for 10 years, sacrificing her relationships, her job, her time, her money, sitting her ass up on Skype while this alleged Bobby was mumbling and couldn't talk because apparently he got into some accident that crushed his windpipes and he lost his ability to speak. And so he would just be grunting on Skype off video and she would just be sitting there like having a conversation with this person for 10 plus years. Y'all, the story is so bizarre. And when you find out who was pretending to be Bobby, baby, everybody their ass whooped. The lady included, because girl, how you sit up there for almost 10 years and go back and forth with somebody through all these apps and think you in a relationship? Your first red flag should have been when you saw Bobby year one at the club. And you ran up to him with so much excitement, like the real Bobby. You ran up to him with so much excitement. Like, oh my God, Bobby, it's me. And Bobby said, who are you? Baby, that should have been your sign to tap out. But no, you checked in for almost 10 years. And so I want to look, if you need a break from reality, if you need a break from all this election foolishness, watch Sweet Bobby on Netflix. And then check back in with me. Also, take some time to watch Breath of Fire on HBO because, you know, the white yoga girlies, they cult. It's what they do and they do it so well. But I'm not going to go deep into, you know, Breath of Fire at this time because I still have other episodes that I need to watch. But it's definitely not on par with Mother God. This is like Mother God light. There doesn't really seem to be, you know, syphilis and meth happening here or psychedelic. Well, no, they definitely doing psychedelics. They might be doing meth. I don't know. But it don't seem like they got they transferring the syphilis. I got everybody nuts. But they got some, you know, enough white mess happening on Breath of Fire that'll make you tap in and be like, this is ridiculous. And as I have said several times, the moment I can figure out how to set my morals and integrity aside, I'm going to cash in on the exploitation of people's hopes and dreams and the fact that they're lost in this world. I'm not going to do it, y'all. I don't have the ability to do it. But if I did, I'd be so miserable. I would be miserable from exploiting people. Let me just be honest. But just watch Breath of Fire. It's a good distraction if you are also looking for one at this time. So let's get into Love is Blind, the reunion show. It aired last night on Netflix. So all the spoiler alerts, if you have not watched the reunion, if you have not watched the entire season, or if you just don't care, you know, all of that is up to you. I decided to care this season because I needed to turn my brain off and tap into a reality that does not belong to me, because I would for damn sure not have been any one of these people on this cast. Okay? Not a single one of them. The whole entire season was almost like the production team decided, oh, how much chaos can we put on camera? And that's what they decided to do. Like, I remember when Love is Blind first got started, it was like, you know, seemed like a pretty, you know, I'm not going to say legitimate because it's still produced TV, but at least it was like reasonable effort to match people and have them go through this process of finding out who they are, who the other person is. They want to be together, get married, all type of shit. But now it's like an introduction of hormonal chaos. This chaos. There was not a single person on the U.S. cast this past season where you're like, oh, like, I'm rooting for you. Wasn't a single couple where you was like, oh, yeah, like, this is cute. I like the way this flows and functions. This could look good. This work. No, all of them were like, what are y'all doing trying to date somebody? Everybody. All of them should have been in relationships with themselves. But since they were not, we got to view the chaos. So let's start with the reunion show. First off, and the most important thing that we all need to go ahead and acknowledge is Nick and Vanessa Lachey, the host of Love is Blind, trash. Like, I come from the era of the original reality television reunion show. So I know good reality TV reunion show hosting when I see it. And Nick and Vanessa are not it. Baby, we need Lala. We need Dr. Drew. We need Andy. You know what I'm saying? I would even take, I'm not even gonna hold you, New York from I Love New York and Flavor of Love. I think she'll make a dope reunion host. But no, we get Nick and Vanessa all boring and giggling and not asking the serious questions, not knowing how to guide or not knowing how to facilitate conversation, not knowing how to ask questions, not knowing how to pick up on social cues and probe, just not knowing how to do shit but sit up there. Horrible, horrible host. But that's beyond the fact. Like, if we can get that shit together, along with getting the production together with a better cast, and honestly, they need to get some new consults, like mental health coordinators, therapist coordinators for the production team. They need to tap in a whole new set of people to help them get this shit back on track. But let's go ahead and get into some of the couples and the people who just didn't end up getting married. First up, Taylor and Garrett. Now, they're boring. And I think the reason that they are boring is because they likely have lives outside of this television shit. And a lot of that was evident throughout the season. Like, I think they may have legitimately been on the show looking for some love. And it looks like, you know, from our gaze onto them, they found it. However, did y'all notice, like, Garrett changed up his whole look? Like, that old boy looked like he was, you know, flipping bricks of cocaine in 1970s and from Miami or something. Looking like a whole Cuban drug lord. He got the long hair, the facial hair, the button down, you know, with a couple of buttons undone on his shirt. I said, all right, Garrett got some bricks. Garrett got some weight. Taylor, okay, I see it. I see why you want him. I am concerned that the relationship is eventually, I don't know, like they're going to run into some issues, because they even brought it up again about Taylor wanted to move back home to San Diego and Garrett agreed to go while they were on the show, but they revealed in the reunion that they decided to stay in the DC area because Garrett can't leave his family. As a woman, I know that shit don't settle well with her, and that's gonna be something that they that might be the thing that gonna go ahead and be like, well, you stay here and I'm going over there, or we gotta figure this out. But either way it go, they boring, they together, didn't like their outfits. Now, Ashley and Tyler. I just want to know, like, Ashley, are you, do you need help? Like, it was giving Get Out. It was giving, we rehearsed this before we got here. It was giving, like, I'm going to stand 10 toes behind my man because I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed. I have to make this work. I feel obligated, right? Like, I just, like, what is happening? Because even the conversation or the explanations that they were giving behind Tyler having the other kids that he was a surrogate for, that of a best friend that was married or with a woman, but the woman left his best friend. Something happened with their relationship. So his best friend that he gave his sperm to have the kids was by herself. So Tyler decided to step in and help raise the kids that were made with his sperm for his best friend that was with a woman. And so that's just their relationship. But he said he don't really have no role in raising them, yet the internet and all the evidence have up online, it tells a different story. Like, you know, matching pajamas, showing up for all the parties and events, like actively in their lives. Like, you were more than just somebody who donated your sperm to your best friend so that she can have multiple children. I don't, listen. I guess it's noble. And maybe Ashley standing by her man is noble. I'm going to tell you something. She did look beautiful. He looked like an anxious, nervous wreck. You can tell that he rehearsed his story in the mayor or with Ashley, and she helped him. She decided that she was going to be the bulldog on stage and to let everybody know, like, don't come for him, because if you come for him, you come for me. So we're just going to leave them alone to figure that out, because at the end of the day, they're young. Ashley is young. So we're gonna leave that all to her to figure it out. But it was really sad to hear her say that she believes that this was a once in a lifetime love, and she can't let it go because she may not be able to find it again. That is incredibly sad to hear because it is oh so false. Oh so false. Quickly with Marissa and Ramses. Did Ramses cut the little pieces of hair off his head? Did y'all notice them two pieces was gone? Or was it the way he was sitting on the sofa? We couldn't quite see the other side of his head where them two little locks might have been. Somebody let me know because it looks like he may have cut them off. And if that's the case, that may have been him releasing his attachments to the, I don't even know, reality, the world, when he cut them locks off. Because when I tell you that young man was sitting up there on that sofa and he had disassociated, he had checked out, he was gone. He was gone. He said what he had to say. Even then, his thoughts couldn't come out clearly. He was rambling. Nick and Vanessa weren't helpful. Marissa was already getting ready to start boo-hooing and howling. Marissa's mama was sitting up there saying she wanted to fight him, but she understood and was happy ultimately that he did call it off. Now, I'm gonna give Ramses credit, even though the way he did it went about it was complete trash. He said, like, he couldn't take on all of her energy. Like, she was just too much for him. And as somebody watching the show with the perspective that I have just on human behavior, he's absolutely correct. Like, Marissa, I don't want to say this is a lot, like, as a general statement, because that's definitely a trigger for many women that I know is to be told that you're a lot. But I will say her range of emotions are, from what we've seen on the show, are erratic. They're unpredictable. They don't match the situation. They don't match the conversation. And many times they don't match the environment. She definitely seems like somebody who struggles with emotional regulation. She definitely seems like somebody who struggles with problem solving and decision making. She also seems incredibly, incredibly anxious, fearful. Even slightly like, well, not slightly like insecure, but like slightly paranoid at times. She is insecure. She's not sure about who she is. She has a hard time with she seems also disinhibited, really quick to attach. I don't know. I'm kind of on Ramsey's side when he's like, she her energy is a lot for me to handle. He probably didn't know how to name some of the stuff the way I named it, but I agree, and I ain't gonna hold you. She kind of gave me a little borderline, but that's a story for a different day. Up next is Hannah. Hannah is just insecure and mean. That girl is just insecure and mean. And she's incredibly young. And you can tell, like, she was not treated the most kindly throughout her childhood and adolescence, and maybe as, in her younger adult years. But she is holding on to a lot of insecurities, a lot of grudge. Now she has amounted some level of recognition and power. And you can tell that she is using that to hurt other people the way that she has been hurt or harmed before. So now that she has some power when she may not have had it before for a variety of reasons, because I know she has struggled with some body image stuff. Now that she has some power, now that people are giving her validation and attention for the way that she looks, she is now taking her power and harming other people with it. So that's not going to turn out well for her in any way. That girl is lonely. You can tell. You can tell. Like, yeah, she's quote unquote getting friends, but that is one lonely young lady who has been by herself for a very long time. And just kind of speaking of the friends thing, it is so annoying how much throughout this entire season, and even on that reunion show, all of the women guests, I mean, cast, kept referring to each other as their best friends. Like, oh yeah, my best friend, that's my best friend, best friend, that's my best friend, that's my best friend. Ladies, no. None of them girls sitting up there, your goddamn best friends. Like, literally acting like they best friends in the whole wide world. Like, they didn't know each other since the womb, since second grade, then got out the mud together. Y'all just met through this shit. Like, where are the boundaries? Like, where's an understanding of how to place people in your life? Everybody does not have the same, is not placed in the same category or function in your life. And so you assigning roles and responsibilities to people that you don't even know. Talking about, that's my best friend. Hannah's my best friend. Marissa's my best friend. Yes, she was mean to me, but that's my best friend. No. Like, these are not healthy displays of friendships and relationships at all. It's an entire season. Nothing about it were healthy displays of friendships or relationships at all. And I have been really deep into these concepts of friendships lately, because those are the relationships that we need to truly focus on nurturing the most, because at the end of the day, like, those are the ones that will stick beside us throughout more phases in life than anybody else. More than families, more than spouses, more than partners. Like, your friends, when you really develop and nurture and pour into meaningful friendships, those are the ones that stick beside you throughout your life transitions. And I really want more people to focus on developing healthy and whole friendships, right? Because many times, like, that is a pathway to a healthy and whole, you know, intimate partner relationship. Like, once you begin to cultivate a relationship with yourself, then you cultivate relationships with friends and people who, you know, your support, your village, and then you can really have a better, healthy and whole, like, and balanced intimate partner relationship. And so just watching all these dynamics on Love is Blind is like, none of these hoes can have no healthy relationship with anybody, because they ain't got a healthy relationship with themselves, and clearly don't have a healthy relationship of understanding what friendship is. So all this shit is just gonna fail. It's gonna fail. Just like Tim and Alex. Tim and Alex, they are nuts. I am not on team Alex, nor am I on team Tim, nor do I fully condemn Tim or fully condemn Alex. Both of them honestly represent what I have witnessed as the majority, like, the relationship dynamics of this time. Like, they are an example of a couple, like, yeah, they did not end up together by the grace of Black Jesus and Beyonce. They did not end up together. But they are a couple that actually represents so many people who end up together, end up married or unmarried with children, like, out in the world, just fucking people's lives up, including each other and themselves. Like, neither one of them were healthy for each other. And I'm uncertain if they're, like, healthy on their own. Definitely Tim. Tim was so activated, and his nervous system was on fire. On fire. His rage and his anger just unchecked and just untamed, right? Just like, I have rage. We all have rage. But when you have these practices of taming it, it makes it more functional for you to use it in ways that don't harm yourself or other people. But somebody like Tim, you could see, like, oh no, like, you definitely can have some violent streaks. Right? It may not be physical. It may come out in your mouth. It may come out in your behaviors. It may come out in a passive aggressive way. But I was like, oh, he's definitely activated in his nervous system. And Alex is a trigger for him. He is a trigger for her. And they really, like I said, they represent one of the, like, a big relationship dynamics that I, patterns that I have certainly seen amongst couples in these last several years. And it's just so concerning and sad, because I just wish more people just wouldn't be together. But they end up intertwining their lives, and they don't know who they are separate of their relationships or separate of their identities inside of their relationships. If that's as provider, as parent, whatever that is, where, like, if they were to leave each other, they'll be lost. And so for a lot of people, it's just easier to be together in the chaos, because the chaos is familiar. Right. And the chaos gives you identity. And when I was just sitting up there watching Tim and Alex, that's where my mind went. It wasn't in, like, the entertainment of their whole little segment. It was like, God damn, like, this is actually how a lot of relationships are functioning right now. And this is so unfortunate that it's on display right here for all of our entertainments. And, like, no one in this moment is giving voice to how it's so much bigger than what we're just seeing on that stage for the reunion. So that's my little Love is Blind recap. I know I didn't forget about the flower girl and the white boy. He was sitting up there looking like vanilla Malcolm X with them glasses on. And and Leo and the little, you know, the girl who liked the money and shit. But, you know, they just weren't relevant in my enjoyment of the Love is Blind reunion. I would say I'm excited for season eight, but I don't know if that's the case. Like, something got to change. It would be so cool to see older people participate in the show. It would be really dope if production would find people that are willing to take this process a bit more serious and are more just stable. Like, this, it is possible to be stable and entertaining. You don't have to identify people who, are relatively unstable in a lot of different areas of their life just to put them on a show for entertainment. You could find people who are stable, whatever that looks like, and they can still be entertaining. So let's try to do that if possible. Love is Blind, season eight, if you're listening. If you need some assistance, I am happy to be one of your mental health coordinators on the show. All right, let's go ahead and get into the tales from the trap for the week. All right. So I'm trying to figure out the best way to really approach this topic with care, with consideration, with compassion, with curiosity, and with understanding, but also with like great frustration because what? So, the Tales from the Trap for the week has It's not a story of my own experiences in the work, but a current issue that is happening within the field that is taking place primarily on social media and really on LinkedIn, of all places. There is a social worker on LinkedIn by the name of Laquita Brooks who has made it her business to spread misinformation about, social work licensure alternatives, like exam alternatives. She has honestly made it her business to just lie about a lot of the hard work and sacrifice that social workers across the country, specifically right now in Illinois, have made to push for more equitable pathways towards licensure in the field of social work. And it is so disheartening. Because you get these reminders and you know it to be true, but it still hurts your heart every single time. It's like all skin folk ain't kin folk, and that's just kind of how it goes. And I really straddle the line of like, all right, all skin folk ain't kin folk, but do we still leave the light on for them if they do decide to wake up and want to come back home? Or do we just push them off the boat and leave them to their own devices to figure that shit out? Right? Like I'd be straddling both sides of that quite frequently, where I just want to be like, fuck it. Fuck them, leave them where they at. And like, oh no, like they're my people. You can't leave your people out to wander the pastures. But then at the same time, if that's where they decided to be, let them do it. And so that's where I am in this moment. So let me kind of walk y'all into what's happening if you aren't familiar with the situation. Like I said, Laquita Brooks has been all over LinkedIn in a very visible and prominent way, which is the reason that I'm speaking about it here, is because she has been very public about these statements. And it has everyone has access to the information. And it's getting to the point where, like, she's been so public with her lies, where we have to be public with countering her lies and like pulling them apart to be like, no, like this stuff is absolutely not true. It is incredibly harmful. And we can see what you're doing, Laquita. We can see what you're doing. We can honestly see that you are working and pushing this propaganda for your own personal gain, for your own brand. This is not about us. This is not about the field of social work. This is not because you care about equity or access to the field. This is about you. You have built a brand. You have gained recognition from being the opposing voice of those that have been working tirelessly for a very long time, for decades. Your own people who have been working tirelessly for decades to make this profession more accessible and equitable for people like you and me. And even for someone like her that has shared publicly failing the social work exam boards more than two times, I believe, to be able to pass it, to then gain her LCSW, to then on the other side say, like, we can't have this legislation. We can't have a pay-to-play model, is the language that she's using to really dice, to really discredit discredit all of the research, all of the just hours of time spent to really create a piece of legislation in Illinois that would allow for folks who are struggling to pass the LCSW exam that if they opt into additional hours of supervision after taking the exam one time and then doing 3,000 hours of supervision, if they do fail the test, they will be able to gain their license at the end of those additional 3,000 hours. Y'all, for anybody who was confused about that, let me break down what that timeline looks like. So just imagine you have somebody who has completed their 2-year degree. Sometimes it's a 4-year degree if it's a part-time program. They now have their master's in social work. They then have to work to find employment at a location that is approved by their regulatory board to say, like, hey, yeah, this job description meets all of the requirements of assessing, diagnosing, case management, clinical work, all of these things. Your job meets that. Cool. You find that job, you get hired at that job, and now you begin, you apply, and you begin your process towards gaining your hours for supervision. At minimum, many states require 3,000 hours of supervision and 100 hours of clinical supervision, and 3,000 hours of experience, right? And so these 100 hours of clinical supervision, these 3,000 hours of experience, tend to total about 2 and some change years, right? That it will take for somebody to get that initial time out of the way. Once they complete that 3,000 hours of supervised experience and 100 hours of clinical supervision, they then can apply to sit for the Association of Social Work Board's exams. So at this point, you are all the way through undergraduate, now you're through graduate school, then now you're through 2.5 years of employment, you're now approved to sit for this and sit and take the test. You finally sit and take the test, and let's just say you do not pass the first time you take this test. Right. So how many years are we in by now? That's 4 years of undergrad, 2 years of graduate. That's 6, 2.5 years of supervision. That's 8, 8.5 to be able to sit for an exam. You do not pass the exam. So now what do you do? For many social workers, the option was to apply to take the test again and again and again and again until you pass. And there are some social workers that have absolutely sat for this exam nearly 10 times and still have not passed the test. Still have not passed the test. Despite all of their hard work, their experience, because remember, you have to maintain employment in order to get approval to sit to take the test again. So you're not without a job, you're not without experience, you're not without exposure to the work as you are just waiting to try and pass a test. And so in Illinois, shout out to the comrade Cassie and all the other homies that worked on that legislation. So in Illinois, they fought tirelessly to introduce a pathway, an alternative, not a replacement, an alternative, meaning the traditional route still exists. The alternative gives people an option. And that option is, all right, take the test. You're required to take the test at least one time. If you take it one time and if you fail, you can opt into the alternative pathway of getting an additional 3,000 hours of supervised experience, which equates to another 2 years on a job. And then you can apply to get your license. What is wrong with that? How can somebody like Laquita and everybody else who is just loud and wrong about this issue believe that because somebody passes a test, that that makes them a more effective social worker, that a test actually protects the public, that a test actually knows anything about doing work with people? How is it possible that we have lost so much faith in people and we put so much faith on an instrument, on a tool that doesn't center people, that only cares about being able to generate revenue and profit and control of a profession that's for people? How have we moved so far away from each other? How are we getting in our own way? It is bizarre to me. It is bizarre to me. It's harmful. It's disrespectful. It is unnecessary because there is space for multiple truths to exist. And that's where people who are on the other side, and I'm gonna say on the wrong side of this issue, they have a very hard time understanding there is space for multiple truths to exist. People who are fighting for alternative pathways to licensure in social work, they're not trying to replace the pathway that exists. They're trying to create options. That's all we're trying to do. Options. Options. The same way you take your ass to Chick-fil-A and they got option 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 on the menu. Options. We deserve the same. That's it. We just want a menu of options when it comes to gaining licensure in the field of social work. And all the options cannot be passing a test that we know is incredibly flawed. Why is this so difficult to understand? Why? It is frustrating because when it's your own people that gets in the way of their own progress, their own efforts, their own future, their own liberation. This shit is nutty. It doesn't make any sense. It will never make any sense. White supremacy and capitalism have done a number on Black and brown people. It's really fucked us up. If you really think by protecting this exam is going to position you closer to white power structures, you are a fool. They don't care about you. They will prop you up on a pedestal. They will use your ass up. And when they're done using and abusing you, they will knock you off that bitch in a heartbeat. And then you're going to be looking around wondering where your people at. When you neglected them, pushed them aside, harmed them, made their lives harder than what it needs to be and harder than what it already is. Laquita and everybody else like her, I'm not going to tell you to wake up. I'm going to tell you to get out the fucking way. You are in the way. You are in the way. You're in your own way. You're in our way. And you are not going to make this easy for any of us, current generations and future generations to come. You are in the way. You are on the wrong side. Point blank, period. Yeah, you're getting validation from people online. But I'm telling you now, when it's all said and done and the dust settles and everything clears, you're on the wrong side. And I hope that you wake up to it now before it's too late. And most importantly, just get out the fucking way, because we're not stopping. We're not stopping. You don't have to see it for it to make sense, but the people that see it, they know it clearly. They're confident. And we're not loud and wrong. We're being loud and we're right. Our information is good. Our research is good. Our knowledge is good. Our experience is good. We are loud and we are right. So we have what we need. It would be helpful if you would just get out the way. Stop being loud and wrong about an issue because it benefits your bottom line. It benefits your brand. It benefits whatever it is you're over there building. You're building it on the backs of your own people. The ancestors are not pleased. Let's go ahead and get into a good Black word for the week. All right. So the good Black word for the week, it's not fully fleshed out, but that's all right. We're going to walk and talk through it together. It really has much to do with, I don't believe in failure anymore. And I've been working through just the concepts of failure for a little bit now, but now I'm at a place where I can solidly and confidently say, I don't believe in failure anymore. Because like, when I really think about it, it's so subjective. There's nothing objective about failure because we can all decide what that is and what it isn't, what it means for us to us and what it may mean for somebody else, right? So there's no objective way to really define or measure failure. even though people, they try their hardest. We see it in the way, you know, grades are set up in schools or test, right? The way tests are measured and what is determined to be a passing score and what isn't. But failure by nature, there's nothing objective about it. And so I choose not to believe in failure anymore, because like your idea of failure can honestly be someone else's North Star. Like when you believe you failed at something, that can honestly be the place where someone that you do not know is striving to arrive to. And when I began to like adopt that perspective, it really set me free from my own conditioning and restraints on what I should be doing, what I have not done, what I need to accomplish, how do I add these things to my list by this date to get this done, and all this other type of shit, right? And also it set me free from believing that I have failed in these various like social areas, being unwedded, not having kids, like all the type of shit that society would deem you need to achieve by a certain age. And if you don't achieve those things, then you have failed. And I was like, no, I have indeed not failed. Those were never my goals to begin with, number one. And the life that I have heard from other people and folks that I do not, you know, but I can imagine like a part of the life, like the life that I have is actually what some other people are striving for. Like, you know, like the freedom that I have to move in the world the way I would like to, the freedom that I have to come home and know that I'm going to find it the way that I left it, the freedom that I have that I only have to feed myself every night, like the freedom that I have if I want to buy a plane ticket right now to just pop off and go to Chicago this weekend, like I could do it, right? And to understand that, like, just because I have not achieved these other things, it doesn't mean that I have not failed. I have achieved all the things in this moment, in my consciousness, that I'm aware of that are for me. So I just want us to release these ideas of failure and not give it any credence. Because when we give it credence, then we put all these restrictions and pressures and mismanaged expectations on ourselves that then make it difficult for us to express and have gratitude and grace and honor where we are in life, and the things that we have are for us, the things that we're doing, we're meant to be doing, and the places that we're going, we don't have to know what they are because we're able to trust these moments and times, and the process is going to get us to wherever our North Star is. But ultimately, what you believe is a failure is what someone else is actually striving for. So, like, yeah, keep that in mind. Whenever you think you are failing at life or failing to achieve, failing to do, failing to whatever, your failure is what somebody else wishes they were doing or had. So just sit with that for a minute. I don't know if it lands somewhere in your body or if it doesn't. If it belongs to you, let it have a home in your heart and in your mind. If it doesn't, let that shit go. But I just felt moved to share that. And that is our Good Black Word for the week. Before I get out of here, I'm going to announce I'm going on a bit of a hiatus. And this episode is actually a monumental episode because it is the last episode that I am recording in my house. In my office, I have sold my home. I feel so free. I feel so free. I have sold my home. And so I am packing everything up. As you can see behind me, the rest of this house is a disaster. I'm packing everything up and putting my things in storage, and I'm about to figure shit out. So this right here is the last episode that I'm recording in my home that I have been in for 7 years now, in a neighborhood that I have lived in since I first moved to Richmond in 2011. And so this is the last episode here in my neighborhood, in my house, on my block. And I'll be back probably in like 2, 3 weeks, something like that. Maybe before Thanksgiving. We'll see how things go. But I have a lot of things that I need to do in transition and get semi-settled. So yeah, I'm gonna go on a bit of a hiatus. I am honored as always that y'all continue to pull up on me, show up and support me and protect me in ways that I do not know. Please know I will never take it for granted. Please understand that I will never use this platform, my power or position to intentionally harm people. I just don't have it in me. And I am beyond grateful. I am truly, truly beyond grateful. As always, y'all, please remember to take care of your hearts so that we can take care of each other. And I'ma holla at y'all when I holla at you. Y'all be well.